Greetings, all of God's people. This is again Mordecai Joseph. We're today in lesson 406. Last time we're in verse 9 of Deuteronomy chapter 22, where God is forbidding farmers. In that time, every Israelite was a farmer, and so he forbids, in essence, that's a law that is for all mankind. He forbids farmers from doing it. And yet today, both farmers, scientists and all that, and the government behind them, they're doing it, despising the law of God, and in the process paying the penalty for it. That is, all of us are paying the penalty for it. And so you find in all kind of inventions of man, you know, whether mix one thing with the other, come up with a new fruit, and you know, fruits that oftentimes cannot reproduce themselves, and something is lacking in the seed, something is lacking in the fruit. A lot of the fruit that you eat today, or vegetables, are tasteless, do not have the proper perfume in them, aroma that God intended for it, and doesn't have the proper nutrients either. And probably, you know, people couldn't care less about it, so nobody, you know, sits down to investigate or research or analyze what is it that is lacking in the fruit in comparison to the natural thing that grows naturally. And so we have a lot of sicknesses and diseases because many of the food that we eat doesn't have the nutrients that God intended for it to have. So because of that, you know, we look sickly. And we have all kind of evil diseases and things that nobody heard before. And we're degenerating. We're getting worse and worse and worse. You see, all of us are paying the penalty. Even if you want to eat good food, there isn't much of it there. Unless you have your own garden, you grow your own things. And even then, there's pollution in the air and it falls down to the ground and it affects the soil and affects the food. But at least you still notice an awesome difference between something that you grow in your own garden and something you get from the supermarket. But on the other hand, you know, how many people have their own garden? How many people can do it? You see, so we're all trapped in it. And because of that, the wrath of God, as Apostle Paul said, many other places than the prophets, you know, is going to fall upon the wicked. A lot of people don't know that they are wicked. Farmers don't know that they are wicked by what they are doing, you see. They do not know the law of Moses. They don't realize how evil what they do is. Because as Paul said, you know, unless they study the law of God, unless I read it, I wouldn't know what sin is. And so many people are bringing on themselves and on others much evil, you see, much destruction, much sickness and disease, and government is involved in it, and promotes it, and condones it, and allows it, and regulates evil, not righteousness as it should, only, you see, and everybody's paying the penalty. And so when God is going to pour His wrath and fury upon the face of the whole earth, all of us are going to have to realize that, and that's why God said, you know, when He brings the people of Israel to their land, both those who are alive in His day and those who are going to come back out of the grave in the second resurrection, He's going to open their eyes. He's going to bring them before the judgment seat. He's going to open the books before them, and so they would know what they've done. And He said, when you realize all those things, He said, you're going to loathe yourself. As you read in Ezekiel 37, you see, people today cannot do it because oftentimes they don't even know what evil they are committing. Why? You don't know the law of God, you don't know. When you don't know, you don't know. So even though God, in spite of that, is going to bring an awful lot of calamity upon all of us, you see, there are also going to be gradations of punishment based on how much we knew, based on how much we were ignorant of. But there are a lot of things that we know, you see, and we don't do it anyway. We don't pay attention to it. We couldn't care less. You know, like all the junk food that people eat all the time, and they make their body sick, and they have all kind of evil diseases, and then they cry to God for healing, and oftentimes He does not listen. Why should He? They'll go back and continue to do the same thing. When the law of Moses gave us all these instructions of what to eat, what not to eat, how to treat the land, how to treat, you know, everything, and not to affect the weather, you know, so it becomes our enemy. And that's why one of the things that God is going to do in the future, He said He's going to make a new covenant with the weather, you see, and man, and with the beasts of the field, and man. You know, that includes, you know, germs and viruses and all kind of things like that that now devour us, you see. When all people are walking in righteousness and obey the law of Moses and all the teachings that He gave us, and they're far deeper than this, and the priesthood that was studying it day and night became the repository. You see, there were the walking libraries of an awful amount, you know, that is awesome amount of knowledge and information which they could bring to the people, to their attention, You see? And this way the people could be very happy, very healthy, very strong. And for that it was worth giving them the tithe. But then they themselves began to depart from the law of God and do their own thing, and then people became ignorant and everybody was paying the penalty. And yet those who have who happen to be in the field of religion still have the audacity of claiming the whole tithe when they do a tiny little bit of it, of the work. And that's very unfortunate, very tragic. You see, that's why the wrath of God is going to fall upon all children of disobedience, because all of us are to one degree or the other. That's why we need to study the law of God day and night, so we can know what we are doing wrong and depart from it, come out of it, repent of it. And so this is what he's saying here. Don't do it. And then we read another law in verse 10. You shall not plow with an ox and an ass together. These are two unequal. You know, don't do things that are unequal. People shouldn't get married when they're unequal in intelligence and in all kind of things like that. You see, products should not be put together when they're unequal. You don't put plastic and iron together and make an engine out of it. One is going to melt. You see, and so it is with animals. There are different things there, you know, that are totally different between an ass and an ox. You know, an ox can do a lot of work, you know, poor little ass. What can you do in comparison to the ox? And you put them together, that's terrible. So that gives you sense, common sense. You see, horse sense, as some people call it, that's a part of the law of Moses. Now, there are many things that he can teach from that. You know, he cannot just elaborate and magnify every time a little detail here. That's up to, you know, for you, to you. And to those around you, you know, that sit together, study this Word of God, and talk about it, meditate on it day and night. And by the Holy Spirit, you know, you're going to have a greater understanding and knowledge and comprehension, you see, and you're going to develop the very nature and mind of God. You will be holy as He's holy, perfect as He's perfect. You will come ultimately to the fullness of the measure of the statutes of Jesus Christ, and this is what it means here when you do it, you see. If you don't know that, you don't know the law of God, you don't know what the Apostle Paul is talking about when he says what he says there. And he taught them the law of God. He went through it day and night. A lot of people don't realize that. They think he just gave them, you know, some Christian principles, few little things here and there, and that was it. That's not what it is. That's what he told Timothy. You know, you preach the word, the Torah. Exhort, rebuke, correct, chasten, you see. Do it with all boldness. And so all the ministers of Jesus Christ were teaching the law, the entirety of it, from A to Z, everything that is applicable, you see. And people were wise, but when the Gentiles came in their pagan concepts and ideas, and the false prophets and the tares, they said, oh, that's old stuff, that's not for us, and they began to separate, and that's how they came up with this terminology. And that's by the end of the first or the second century, actually by the second century, of New Testament, Old Testament. In other words, they applied the new marriage and the old marriage covenant to the entirety of the package deal of the books. Now, this is another terminology for it. You see, the marriage covenant, the old marriage covenant, the new covenant speak only about the marriage itself, not about the laws of it. You see, that are written in all those books from Genesis to Revelation. Those are called the law of the prophets, that is the Torah, the prophets, and the writings. And all the writings that later on came by the disciples, they were part of the writings. And of New Testament and Old Testament. And all of us are using this terminology, and that's not pleasing in the sight of God. And we couldn't care less. We're so used to it, we've done it all of our lives. They've been doing it for centuries. And so that's how they refer to it. And you always have to remind people. That's what Christ said, you know. When he wanted to explain to the disciples that were walking on that Sunday all about himself, he says, in beginning with Moses, and then he expounded to them all things written about him in the Torah, in the prophets, and in the writings. And that's how you read it there, the end of the book of Luke. And people couldn't care less about that, well, because they're into another religion. And they're not willing to admit it. And so God says, don't do that about the ox and the and the ass, and the same thing with the truth. Don't mix old truth and new truth. Don't mix your own religion or your old background, your own thoughts and emotions and feelings with the law of God. When you do, you got a hodgepodge of something else. And that's not acceptable to God. And yet much of religion is this mixture. of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, God says, don't do it. And people do it. God says, unless you return to the law of Moses that tells you not to do this and tells you what to do and what not to do, I'm coming after you and bring utter destruction upon the whole earth. Verse 11, you shall not wear a mingled stuff, wool and linen together. Again, because one thing is strong, the other one is not. You know, they don't fit. You know, one is going to get worn out. You see, how would you like to have a nice piece of cloth? You know, that one part of it is worn out because you put the wrong stuff together. So you see, these are all spiritual connotations and physical connotations, and the whole thing go together. For that matter, you know, even when you cook your food, if you don't have proper knowledge of nutrition, there are certain things you shouldn't be eating together. What is one of the main things that people eat together? Potatoes and steaks. That's a horrible diet. Why? The simple thing. You go to a nutritionist, they'll tell you, you know, the potato, the acids, you know, and the enzymes there will begin to work on the potato, and that is on the meat, and the meat will be digested, you see, and the potato will just remain there waiting its turn. In the process, it begins to ferment, and you feel bloated, you know, in your stomach, and full, and many hours down the road, you still feel that way, and then you have another meal, when your stomach is still full of that food. That's not good for the body. You want to eat meat? Eat meat. Don't eat it with potatoes, baked potatoes. You want to eat potatoes? Eat it separately. You see? So people don't know any of these laws, and there is no knowledge nor understanding there. Even though it is there, with, you know, in the books of nutrition, yeah, people couldn't care less about that. They just eat what feels good. You know, if it's good, do it. God says, don't do it. Don't mix these kind of things. Either with animals or clothing or food or all kind of things like that, it's not good. So the law of God, you know, the law of Moses was there to give you wisdom, knowledge and understanding and health and success in life. And when you reject it, what do you have? You see, you're paying the penalty for it, and then you think that God is going to deliver you and bail you out of it, and He's not. You cannot mock Him and then expect Him to do something for you. And that's the height of arrogance and audacity for anybody to say, why did God let Johnny die? Because you are the one that killed him. Not him. God didn't do it. You did it. One way or the other. You see? Men did it. The parents did it. But disobedience to the law of God and all these laws of health and exercise and all kind of things like that that God gave us and the pollution of the earth, we did it. And then in our hypocrisy, in our ignorance and blindness, we blame God for it. And people are angry with God. That's why God says, I'm going to open your eyes and I'm going to make you understand what you have done to yourself, and then you're going to loathe yourself because you had the audacity of pinning the blame on me after all that you've done. You see? I love Jesus, but I hate His law. And then you're belly aching, you know, when all kind of evil things come upon you. And you blame me for it. And so people say, who needs religion? You see, an awful lot of hypocrisy among men. We're our worst enemy. The devil is not our worst enemy. We are our worst enemy. Because God gives us the power to resist the devil, you see, but we are not willing, having free moral agency, to resist ourselves and the wrong things that we do. And so that's what God is saying here. You shall not wear a mingled stuff, wool, and linen together. It's just a principle that applies to many things. Verse 12, you shall make you twisted cords, in Hebrew, dilim, that's what it means, twisted cords, upon your, the four corners of your covering. You see, what's a covering? A garment, the coat that you wear, the outer coat, which people wore in the past in the farming community. They don't do today. You know, you hang around with shorts and pants, or even long pants and shirt, and things like that. You don't wear a garment, especially not in summer. But in the Middle East, you notice there, you go there and you see even in summer, they wear an outer garment. And you wonder, you know, what's the matter with you? You know, you're wearing an outer garment. Don't you know it's hot? No, they know something better. That when you keep this outer garment, you sweat inside, and then you create your own internal air conditioning system. You see? And so they continue to wear outer garment until recent time, you know, when people began to follow modern practices, which are not good for the body. A lot of things that we do are not good for the body. And so when he had that outer garment, he says, this is what you do. You make those twisted cords and you hang them. And a lot of nations were doing it. A lot of people were doing it for all kinds of reasons. As the commentary gives us a little bit of information here, let's read it. for verse 12. Twisted cords or gdelim in Hebrew, identified by the rabbis with the tzitzit, you know, the fringes that people, you know, the tassels that people wear. Of course, the problem with the rabbis, not following the law of God, doing their own thing. You see, they don't put it on the outer garment. They don't, you know, attach it to the outer garment that they wear. No, they do it something inside to hide it inside, you know, because of persecution and all kind of things like that. And society changed. But even then, they continue to wear, you know, the outer garment. They still don't have it on the outer garment. So a lot of people don't realize that. Daniel Boone, you know, he had those fringes. That's the reason he did it for it, because he knew the law of God. He, you know, he read these kind of things. A lot of people don't know much about Daniel Boone, a lot of people in those days. And so that was one reason for it. And so the rabbis really do not follow the law when they have this fringes and talis and tzitzit and all those things that they wear, because that's not what God asked them. You see, He didn't ask them when you go to the synagogue, you put, you know, the talit on. You see, this is not what He said to them. He said, on your outer garment, the thing that you wear all the time. And ironically, when you go to Muslim countries, in like places Afghanistan, Pakistan, Kurdistan, places like that, the children of Israel that went over there went east instead of coming west, with the rest of the body of Israel that came west. And to this very day, though, most of them are into Islam, and many of them still know their identity, they even know the identity of the tribes, they still wear this outer garment. A lot of them, as time went by, didn't know where it came from, while others did. And so when they saw Jews wearing the same thing, they would ask them, well, how come you're wearing the same stuff that we do? Well, the Jews replied to them, we do it because that's what Moses commanded us, that's what God commanded us, and you do it too, only you don't know who said it and why you're doing it. Which is very ironic, but in all cases, it's on the outer garment that they wear. Not a little thing that you put under your shirt, you know, as I used to do when I was a kid, because that's what the rabbis taught me, I just did it. That's what my father, you know, taught me, and, you know, that's all he knew. You see? And that's not following the law of Moses, that's doing our own thing. That's what halacha is all about. You know, they alter the law of God, they twist it, and God says, through Moses, this is the law, you don't add, you don't diminish, you don't alter, you don't change, you don't do anything of your own. Don't think that you're smarter than God. Yet we do think that we're smarter than God, and we do our own thing, and we call it religion. And God says, let's vomit. I don't want it. I don't accept, you know, worship under these circumstances, and I do not consider your worship, and you worship me all in vain. You know? You're wasting your time. That's what He's saying to us. So we've got to do it as He told us. And so He said here, gdilim in Hebrew, you know, twisted. And gdilim means, comes from the word gadol, you know, that was big. In other words, you got a garment, and then you elongate it, you know, by adding those things, you make it bigger. And that's what, you know, the word gdilim comes from. You see, it's a word that is generally not used. And this is one probably the only places in the Bible that you'll find this word. I don't recall ever seeing it anywhere else. Gdilim, but he says it's what you do, and the commentary tells us, well, you know, the rabbis identified that with the tzitzit in number 15:37-41 among all the peoples. You see, knots had been used as reminders and symbols among all peoples. It was so common, as we mentioned that earlier. Many nations did that, and they had different purposes for it. You see, but God told them, you do that too, but unlike all the others, you add a blue thread. That's a mark of royalty. Why? Because you are a royal priesthood. The rabbis don't do it. Because they say, well, we don't know how to do it anymore. You know, the old days they had that method. You know, it's to take those little creatures from the sea and make that blue thread, the blue dye, and they put it on the thread. God didn't tell them to go to that creature in the sea. Just make it blue. You know? And people have no problem making, you know, a thread in blue. And so there's no reason for the rabbis to ever do away with that. But, you know, people into their own understanding. And so, all that you see today, and all the Jews that wear it, they're all doing it in vain. God doesn't accept it. Because He told them, first, do it on the outer garment. Second, put a blue thread there. You don't do it, you're doing it in vain. So a lot of people, you know, who want to go back to the law of God, they think, well, I've got to do it like the Jew. I have to wear this thing. Well, if you do it right. You see? And if you don't hang around, you know, with a garment, you can't do it. It's as simple as that. So it's a matter of circumstance. And if you want to hang around, you know, with a coat all the time, summer and winter and fall and everywhere else, you know, whenever you go to work, whenever, you know, whatever you do in life, you see, if you want to do it right. But even then, understand it, God didn't expect his people to wear that garment all the time. You know, if it's hot, you take it off. You know, you take a shower, you take it off. You do this or that, you take it off. You see, but you know, when he said, when you put that garment on, when you go out with that garment on, have those things there. And they have a purpose, as he told them. So, you're going to touch them, think about them, and remember what they are there for. To remind you not to go after your own heart, not to devise your own law, not to invent your own, you know, catechism or your own halakha or your own ethics or whatever it may be. Not to follow the Gentiles, not to follow the heathen, not to follow their practices, but just to think about the law of God in its purity. And very few people function by the purity of the faith today. That's the faith that Jude talked about, to return to the faith that was once delivered. He's not talking about his days, he's talking about the days when God descended on Mount Sinai, and to begin with, when he came to the Garden of Eden and gave it to Adam and Eve. That's the faith he's talking about, but the ignoramuses, they don't know what he's talking about, and so they say, well, he's talking about Christianity. And he's not. He's a Jew, raised on the Torah. That's what he's talking about. That's the faith. The faith of Jesus Christ, who is the same yesterday, today, and forever, from the Garden of Eden. And so that's what he says here. And so the commentary continues, well, among all peoples, knots have been used as reminders and symbols, and the tzitzit, as they call it in Hebrew, as you read earlier in Numbers, are a constant, which means, you know, corners, are a constant reminder of the special relationship in which the Israelite stands before God, that is, stands to God. And the consequent duty of, withstanding temptation to sin. So, you know, you feel like you're being tempted, you know, you take hold of that and you remember, in other words, you take your mind off the sin, or the temptation, or the covetousness, or the lust, or whatever it may be, and you begin to immediately think about the law of God. In other words, as some people would say today, what would Jesus do? What would the Torah say? What would Moses say? What would any of the prophets, you know, that spoke in the name of God, what would the disciples say? That's what it means. That's what the tzitzit is all about. And if people don't do it properly and right the way God commanded it, you're doing it all in vain. And so, to withstand temptation and sin, and not to do the wrong things, not to lean to your own understanding, and every time you open your mouth and you begin to talk and pontificate and speak your own words, get hold of it. In other words, go back to the law of Moses. That was the intent. You know, it was a physical thing for little children, so to speak, who couldn't use their own brain properly. And so God gave them all kind of little things like that. But had they been righteous and obedient, and Paul says the law is not made for the righteous. If you walk in righteousness, if your mind and heart is on God, on His Word, you don't need all these little, so to speak, I wouldn't call it gimmicks, because they're not, but all these little things, reminders. You see? When we get senile and old, we need reminders for this and that and the other thing, and we put it, you know, on the fridge, here and there. But if we are people who can remember all things, we don't need it. That's what it means. The law is not made for the righteous. It doesn't mean that the righteous doesn't need the law of God. But certain things, you know, that you don't need a reminder, you don't need it. And so when God gave this law, you have to understand the purpose for it and the reason for it. And this is what he's saying here. And then it's interesting, they make a comment here. There is a well-known Talmudic story of a reprobate. And you're going to think about it now because you've heard it before that somewhere else. And this is where, in essence, they got it from. And ironically, here they're going to speak about something which they heard from Jesus Christ. Of course, they're not going to admit it. But that's, in essence, what happened because, mind you, there were an awful lot of Jews, obedient, rabbis, priests, and other things like that. So that became a part of the folklore of the nation, you see. And so somebody else, you know, came up with that, but did not give credit to whom credit was due, who is the one that really said it first. So here it is, what we read. There is a well-known Talmudic story of a reprobate and righteous liver, you know, like the prodigal son. That's the story of the prodigal son, who was recalled to his better self by the tzitzit he wore, so as to break completely with his wicked past. Where did they get it from? That's exactly the story of the prodigal son. You see? That forsook his father. That's what Christ was talking about. He forsook the law of Moses. He forsook righteousness. He forsook the word of God. And he went doing his own thing. He went into the field of the devil, so to speak, and then he got to the bottom and he realized, what on earth am I doing here? I got to go back to my dad, to his law, to his word, to his teachings. That's the story that Christ was talking about. And people do not know that, don't have the background, they don't know what he was talking about. And some of the Talmud records that later on. This is what they understand from it. So a person has to go back to his God. And how do you go back to your God unless you return to the law of Moses and you begin to obey his voice and you repent? That's what he said when he came. The kingdom of God is at hand. Repent. See? Return to the law of Moses. Take hold of your tzitzit, so to speak, you know, the fringes, and remember what it means, and go back to the law. And if you are the kind of a person that needs constant reminder, it's a good idea for you to have it. But if you are the kind of person where your law, your mind, that is your nature, your heart, is in the law of God, in the Word of God, you don't need those reminders. Jesus Christ didn't need those reminders, not that he didn't wear it, he wore it like everybody else. If you're in the community and everybody does it, you're not going to be a bad example to them and not do it. So obviously Jesus Christ wore it. And that's what happens with one of the ladies. It says that she held on the corner of his garment to be healed, you see, and she was healed. That's what it meant. She held on his tzitzit because he wore it. And so when people return to that kind of a society in the future, and if you wear a garment, and God says, okay, there it is. Everybody does it now. We all do it then, you see. But again, you have to deal with circumstances and understand at the same time that law is not done away with just because, you know, we are not wearing garments, outer garments. You know, if I hang around with a shirt, where am I going to put it? I don't have an outer garment. You see, and my shirt is stuck in my shorts and my pants. You see, or you go to the beach, you know, you have a bathing suit. You know, you don't hang around even with a garment. You don't have it with you. So understand the intent of it, the purpose of it, the meaning of it. And when people don't, they just do things blindly. You see, it becomes a ritual, legalistic manner, and doesn't mean anything. God is not interested in that. And so this is what this law is all about. And then we continue with verse 13. If any man take a wife, you see, well, obviously, most men take a wife. But you see, when you take a wife, in other words, it's not if. You know, when you take a wife and going unto her, you see, as we mentioned earlier, what is marriage all about? You take a wife, you don't go to a rabbi, you don't go to a priest, you see. Now you do it different ways. You might have a party, you know, the parents are involved, and the real marriage takes place is when you go in, you know, into bed, that is, you go to bed with her, your room, and you have sex. That's what it means to go in unto her. So if he takes a wife and going unto her, and after that he hates her. You see, after they had sex, you see, he hates her. And what do you do under this case? God says, verse 14, and so if he hates her, for whatever reason, and lay wanton charges against her, in other words, evil report, brings an evil report against her, and bring her, that is, bring up an evil name upon her, and say, now that he hates her, now he's trying to get away from this commitment. And you see, and once two flesh become one, that's what the law says. That's what later on was mentioned. That's what Jesus Christ, the God of Israel, when he descended in the flesh, he talked about this law. You see, you read it in Matthew 19, I believe, in verse 6. What God put together, what God joined together, you see, that was the issue there. Let no man put asunder. So God is the one that binds the marriage, not man, not the rabbi, not the priest. He's not interested in them doing it. You see? He wants a family to do it, and he wants the people involved in themselves to come together. You see? And ultimately, the husband and wife. And as they approach each other, that should basically say, this is in accordance with the law of God, or this is not in accordance with the law of God, and therefore, when we're going to have sex, we better realize God is going to bind us in that moment. And so we better be responsible for our actions after that. You see? So God is the one involved at that point. Whether they know him or not, it's neither here nor there. When a man and a woman come together and become one flesh sexually, that's when the binding occurs by God, not by man. So man can do all he wants, it's neither here nor there. It's meaningless. You see? And that's what it is here. So he comes to her. They have sex. That's why he mentions that. He goes in unto her. Doesn't suggest if he just marries her, but he goes in unto her because that's where the binding occurs. You see? By God, by their actions. You know, when you make a commitment, when you make a vow. You see? That's your action. It's at that point that God holds you responsible for it. And so when they have sex, God holds them responsible for it, and they are married, and they can call it all they want, you know, shacking up or living together. It's neither here nor there. It doesn't mean anything to God. You're bound. So that's why God says, you better not mess around with somebody you don't want to stay, you know, for the rest of your life. You see? Because it's at that point that I bind you. Regardless if we went to the judge, you went to the court, or you went to the priest or the robber, whatever it may be, all that is neither here nor there. You cannot say, well, today I have sex with you, and tomorrow who cares about you? I'm going somewhere else. God is holding us responsible for it. And you can see how people are transgressing the law of Moses right and left, and the clergy is there, deceiving them. They don't even know what it means, marriage. You know? Because the custom that they had invented, you know, a few centuries ago, they say, well, that only if you do that you are married, and if you don't do that you are not married. You see, this is the lie of men. This is not the teaching of Moses, the teaching of God. And so he says, if any man take a wife and go in unto her, and now he hates her for whatever reason, and lay, you know, evil report against her, you know, brings charges against her, and this is what he says: I took this woman. It is, I took my wife, the one I love, the one I should love. I took this woman, and when I came nigh to her, in other words, when I had sex with her, I found in her. I found not in her the tokens of virginity. Well, here I have sex with her, and she's not virgin. That means I'm free, because that was a ground for divorce. That was accepted before God. It's based on that you have the right to say, I put you away. We're not married. Because God bound us when we got together and had sex, but that was on the premise that you are a virgin. Unless, you know, they talked about it before that, and she told him the truth. And then he accepted that. At that point, he's bound. You see? And she's bound, too. But in this case, you know, he's just pretending that she's not. Well, the society learned how to take care of that. And they do it to this very day. And not as much as they used to. I know in my own family, I remember one case where it was done, where my brother, he got married to a girl whose parents were still keeping this custom, because they came from a community that still were doing it. They happened to be Persian Jews. And so they had this, you know, the celebration. And they look here and there to try to flee from their parents, because they don't want them to come and get involved in that. You see, they knew what they were up to. And so they took a cab and ran home in order to take their clothes and grab their, you know, whatever they need and go, you know, to their honeymoon. And guess what? As soon as they arrived home, the parents were already waiting there for them. They knew what they were up to. And they told them, you go now into this room and you have sex. And we want, you know, the proof, you know, the token of virginity, as they call it here. And they had to. They had no choice. And that's in essence what happened. That's what the society did. So this is what we read here. This is what he's talking about, the tokens of virginity. In other words, when she was deflowered, you know, the sexual act, if she was a virgin, you know, a drop of blood is going to come out. And it's going to be on, you know, the bedspread or whatever, on the sheet. And so this is what they gave to the parents as a proof, and this is what they kept. And the parents, the father and mother, kept it. Why? So later on he cannot say she was not. That's the idea. You see? And people think, you know, that's stupid, that's crazy. What kind of thing is that? Well, when you realize what can happen after that and how God dealt with it, then you understand that it's a good idea. It's not that bad. And if people had to do that, they're not going to be messing around, you know, when they're not supposed to. And so we read in verse 15, then shall the father of the damsel and her mother take and bring forth the tokens of the damsel's virginity unto the elders of the city in the gate. Why? Because they were there waiting, you know, for that to happen. And as soon as that happened, you know, they walked in and grabbed the, or, you know, they gave it to them, you know, you got to be decent. You know, they gave it to them, you know, as a proof. And they took it and kept it. You know, just in case. And so, this way he could bring it to court, so to speak. That's a proof that he had there, and he could not deceive anybody. And so that's what he says. This is what the parents do. And they take and bring forth the tokens of the damsel's virginity unto the elders were basically the grandparents, you know, the elders of the city, the household heads, you know, the family. That's what means, you know, the elders of the city, because they're all related, all family. It's not talking about foreigners, you know, who are the officials. You don't know from Adam, you know, happen to be the judge and lawyers or whatever it may be. That's not what it's talking about. It's talking about family members who are the elders of the city. And the damsel's father shall say unto the elders, I gave my daughter unto this man. That's how it happens. That's how marriage occurs. Of course, today people couldn't care less about it. They do their own thing. They couldn't care less about their parents. They don't let their parents know about it. They just spring it on them. Guess what? I'm getting married. Or I got married. Or whatever it may be. You know, went to Las Vegas, we eloped. And so he says, that's the reason, you know, why people eloped. Because they didn't want the parents to be there, you know, and wait for that token of virginity. A lot of people don't realize, you know, what this eloping was all about, where it came from. And so he says, I gave my daughter unto this man to wife, and he hates her. You know, he went in to her, he had sex, and here I have the proof. And lo, he has laid wanton charges, or evil charges, saying, I found not in your daughter the tokens of virginity. Now, whom is he kidding? He should have known. He should have known that the parents have it. He thought he was, you know, he could get away with it. People forgot all about it. Maybe they lost it, whatever it may be. And he says, no way, here it is. We kept it. And so he says, I found not your daughter, that is your daughter, I found not in your daughter the tokens of virginity. In other words, she was not a virgin when I had sex with her. And yet, he says, the father, these are the tokens of my daughter's virginity. Here is the proof. And they shall spread the garment before the elders of the city, you know, the garments that they slept on. You know, today we call it the sheets. In the old days, you know, they had different things, obviously. And the elders of that city shall take the man and chastise him. You don't go to court and have lawyers and have and all these complexities of life, and everybody has to pay a lot of money, and the lawyers make a lot of money in the process. You don't need all that. Here's the proof. The elders say to you, the young boys, young men around there, you know, the police force, you know, their own police force, so to speak, you know. That's what God says. You got to have officers also besides judges. He says, you know, grab him and, you know, give him a taste of his own medicine. Suck it to him. Basically, they gave them 40 lashes minus one. And he says, they'll take him and chastise him right there on the spot. They're not going to say, oh, you naughty, naughty boy, what did he say? No, they're literally beating him. You know, and that's the way it happened. So nobody plays games anymore after that. And imagine that, and I mean, you know, in front of everybody, and he's going to be shamed for the rest of his life. And on top of that, he's going to have to be, again, you know, stuck with the same woman. And what kind of relationship are they going to have after that? Think about it. Verse 19, and they shall fine him 100 shekels of silver on top of that after they chastise him. You see. And use, you know, the whip for that. Then he has to pay 100 shekels for it. You know, silver, you could buy, that is a slave for 30. He's going to have to pay 100. You see, that's quite a penalty. And give them unto the father of the damsel, because he has brought up an evil name upon the virgin of Israel, and she shall be his wife. He may not put her away all his days. There were other occasions where you could do it, somewhere down the road for this reason or that reason. God says, in this case, tough luck. That's what you were trying to do. You're going to get stuck for the rest of your life. In other words, think about it before you do it. Don't play games. And when people abide by the law of Moses, then people are living in harmony and unity, and they're responsible for their own actions. And they don't play games with anybody, and there is no cycle of crime and violence in the family, in the land, in the society. You see? Because everything is taken care of right away in a very simple manner. And there is no prison. And there is nothing there. You know? You suck it to him, so to speak. You whip him. Make him pay. And life goes on. You see? And he learns a lesson in humility. And he behaves himself. And if he's going to not behave himself, well, the officers are going to come after him again and give him another 40 lashes. Now, obviously, people do not want that, so they're going to behave themselves and learn a lesson. And obviously, at this point, he's still a young man, generally speaking, and you know, he needs to wise up, settle down and mature, and begin to do things right, and learn the good lesson. It's better to do it right than wrong, because crime doesn't pay. Verse 20, but if this thing be true, what happens if it is true? That the tokens of the virginity were not found in the damsel, obviously if she was not a virgin, her parents don't have any proof, then they shall bring out the damsel to the door of her father's house, and the men of her city shall stone her with stones that she die. And today say, how horrible. This is the doctrine of Christ. That's how you prevent this problem. And if you don't, most women are going to be, in God's terminology, harlots. You see? They're going to mess around. They're going to corrupt the society. And that creates a lot of problems in the society when men and women are not behaving themselves properly. An awful lot of evils come upon the society, and because people have rejected the law of Moses, they couldn't care less about that. To begin with, they say, well, there is no sin. Sin is done away with. And other laws done away with, even though some people still want to retain a measure of morality, you see. But we're all functioning like the people of Sodom and Gomorrah. Our threshold, our moral threshold is so low, and all of us are guilty one way or the other, but the things that we do or see or condone or accept or, you know, say, well, it's not my business, things like that, you see, all of us are going to be penalized for it. And God is going to return, restore all his people back to this law of Moses, and nobody's going to play games in the future anymore with this. And if they do, this is what is awaiting them, because this law is not done away with. Until heaven and earth pass, this law is not done away with. Just because it is on hold today and we do not do it, doesn't mean that it's not going to be restored. That's what God says. I'm going to put my laws, this Torah, in their heart. And then there is no need to punish anyone, because it's going to be in their heart if they obey it, obviously. And they're going to walk in it. That's a part of the new marriage covenant. Don't mess around. Either before or after marriage. And so he says, this is what they do to her. And they'll stone her because she has wrought a wanton deed in Israel to play the harlot. That's what God calls a woman like that. You see, today we call them Hollywood actresses. You see, or the men, the actors. God doesn't call them that. He calls them harlots, you know. And for the men, you know, whatever name you want to give them. You see, adulterers, fornicators. That's what they are. And yet people idolize those kind of people. You know, the rock stars, what are they all about? You know, rap stars, what are they all about? You know, all those people, even you know, men in government, what are they all about? Even the President of the United States, and many of them, and many presidents have done it. What are they all about in the sight of God? That's not what people call them, you see. And God is going to restore this law, and nobody's going to, you know, mess around anymore when that time comes. That's why he says, unless you return to the law of Moses, I'm coming after you, and I'm going to bring utter destruction on all of you and the whole earth. And so he says, she played a harlot in her father's house, so shall you put away the evil from the midst of you. You do it once, and how many women are going to mess around? Think about it. And what happens if the man is the one responsible for it? Well, now his turn comes. If a man be found lying with a woman married to a husband, adultery, and people do it all the time, do it in the office, do it here and do it there, do it, you know, in the White House, you see, everywhere. Priests are doing it, ministers are doing it, rabbis are doing it, everywhere. Everybody does it, one degree or the other. You see, in other words, you find those people everywhere. It's not that everybody does it. A lot of people would, you know, would like to do it if they could, you see, and you're just as guilty if you haven't done it. But you think about it, that's what Christ was saying, that's what the God of Israel said. That's what he said to begin with, and the men of God knew it. It wasn't something new. And even if you think about it and you desire to do it, you've already done it. You see? So how many of us are under the death penalty when we do that? We don't even realize it. That's why it was convenient for men, and men wanted to do it, to say the law is done away with, so they can go and do whatever they want. That's why evolution came about. And they made it very plain. They didn't want God, they didn't want church, they didn't want anybody imposing their own morality on them. They wanted to do whatever they wanted to do, and mainly they were talking about sexuality. And so they wanted a godless religion. Well, nobody's going to tell them what to do. And so conveniently they took evolution as it. That's their religion. You see? And God is going to make a monkey out of all those people who claim they came from a monkey or an ape or whatever when the time comes. They can play all the games they want today, and pervert and twist and confuse bits and pieces of information out there and deceive the innocent. to make them believe that everything came about and nobody was there to do it. You know, that's a height of insanity when you think about it. You know, you walk down the road and you see a glorious whatever, you know, flower or tree or plant, or you see a car out there, a factory or a city, and it just happened. You see, it just happened by evolution. Nobody did it. That's how insane people are. And so, this is what you do with a man. He says, if a man found lying with a woman married to a husband, then they shall both of them die, the man that lay with a woman and the woman, so shall he put away the evil from Israel. And in the past, now and then, people did it. And to this very day, when you find it in Islam, in Islamic countries, when they want to do it, the whole world says, oh, Habba, those are barbarians. That's what they tell God. That's what they tell Christ. You're a barbarian. That's his law. That's where they got it from. That's where Islam got it from. As a matter of fact, many societies, they had it. Why? Because long time ago, they knew a measure of the law of God. And that was from the Garden of Eden. Don't mess around. You want to have sex with a woman, she better be your wife. Well, anyway, we're going to stop at this point. This is again Mordecai Joseph. Greetings to all of God's people. Until next lesson.